So we're hearing here about King Chitraketu and how King Chitraketu had a material desire, and by the mercy of Krishna, he received the material desire, and he also received the suffering that came along with the fact that his material desire was not to remain with him for very long. And then after that, he became much more serious in his spiritual life. At first he didn't. He didn't learn from suffering. It's not that people learn anything from suffering. Please understand this. Most people, when they suffer, they try to get rid of their suffering. They feel sorry for themselves, or they feel angry, or they feel disturbed. And they don't remember Krishna automatically or take shelter of him. But if at the time of suffering, as with King Chitraketu, they're approached by a saint or a sadhu, or by opportunity they approach a saintly person, then there's a possibility that the suffering will turn out to be favorable for them. Otherwise not. Because if you think about it, everyone is suffering and everyone is not becoming spiritually advanced. But here we see that in this particular situation, Chitraketu was blessed. He was blessed with this association, and as a result of that, his mind changed, and he took seriously his spiritual practices. And his spiritual practice, it sounds like it was quite simple, but I would think that he took it very seriously, because only in 7 days of chanting this mantra and fasting and no eating and no drinking and simply chanting and chanting and chanting and focusing his mind, he obtained the perfection of the mantra. And the perfection of the mantra was that he had the darshan of the Lord. Now somebody asked the question, shouldn't somebody who sees the Lord, shouldn't they therefore become totally purified? Everything's taken care of. And my response to that was to say, no, it depends on you still. It depends on how you're thinking when you see the Lord. Because you can come in here and you can take darshan of the deities, but your mind can be elsewhere. We all have that experience. So your eyes can see the deities, but your mind is not absorbing anything. This happens to us all quite regularly. So the same thing can be there, that you can see the Lord and you're not receptive. You're not there for the right reason, and therefore one sees the Lord like Daksha did, and Daksha prayed, please give me the power to have many children, and he received that. But Chitraketu's mind had been changed deeply, and so when he saw Lord Shankarshan, he didn't want anything else. Yet, as a byproduct of his devotional activities, and we should be conscious of this ourselves, as a byproduct of our devotional activities, we get a sense of well-being. He got the opportunity to become a Vidyadhara. That means he got the opportunity to fly around in space with beautiful women and sing and chant the glories of the Lord for millions and millions and millions of years. So he accepted that because he accepted it in the mood that he was going to engage in chanting and glorifying the Lord. But we will also be offered similarly byproducts of our devotional activities. And if we're not devotionally intelligent enough, we will accept the byproduct rather than accept the bhakti. And you can be sure that you and I and each one of us will be tested in this way. Krishna will arrange that we will receive with one hand this and one hand this, and we have to make the decision which one we actually want. So this is quite a serious thing. So here, Chitraketu had passed that final test. He was aware of what he wanted. And so what happened was that Krishna himself, Srila Prabhupada explains, the purport of why he was cursed, although superficially it seems that he made a big mistake, and perhaps you can say, in one sense, he made a mistake. But the purport, Srila Prabhupada said, of poverty's cursing him, The purport is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to bring Chitraketu to Vaikuntha Loka as soon as possible. The Lord's plan was that Chitraketu be cursed by poverty to become Vritrasura, so that in his next life he could quickly return home back to Godhead. So there was a plan behind this. There was a plan on the Lord's side. But that is because Chitraketu was fully surrendered. He was ready. He was mature. He wanted that and only that. And this is the stage that we as devotees have to attain to. And sometimes we may think, oh, that's too much trouble. And if we think like that, we should know that we're still going to be generating more lifetimes in the material world, because we're not yet mature enough to actually graduate from the material side and enter into the spiritual realm. Because the spiritual world isn't like here. We get used to what it's like here. Here I take a little Krishna and I take a little Maya. I take a little of this, I take a little of that. We have that freedom. And whilst we need that freedom, Krishna will kindly arrange for us to have that. And when we come to the point that I want nothing except Krishna's service, then the graduation occurs and we can actually attain to our spiritual service, our eternal spiritual service. So we should all be very much careful that we don't get the offer to become a Vidyadhara and fly around in space enjoying life and also having Harinam Sankirtan at the same time. But we should be anxious to actually complete the Krishna consciousness process. So Prabhupada says, there have been many instances in which a devotee acting as a demon has been brought to the kingdom of God by the mercy of the Lord. Can you think of one? Bali Maharaj? Parikshit Maharaj, I don't think, was acting like a demon. Jai Vijay, that's right, yes. Prahlad Maharaj, you could say, in a sense, was acting like a demon. He was a son of a demon, but he was born Jagai and Madhai. Vibhishan, you could say, yes. He was on one side, but he had a sentiment. And there was one of Duryodhana's brothers, I think, right, who changed sides before the Mahabharata, the battle occurred. So we could say that we are also acting as demons. Perhaps we could say we're not only acting. We have the tendency, the nature. But we're on that side, and we wish to come to the other side. So this has to be developed in us. I want to go to the other side. I may have come from whatever I've come from. I may have been this, I may have been that. I may have been important, I may have not had an important role in society, but I want to go to the other side. And then that means that we're a mixed devotee, you could say, and one who's aspiring to live in Indraloka, he may be a mixed devotee, but we're going like this, in the opposite direction. We're going that way and they're going that way. And gradually, the mixedness in our heart will become reduced. So Chitraketu, he was eventually cursed, and this curse was the cause of his returning home back to Godhead. So this is for Chitraketu. Let us also hear something of his prayers when he became Vritrasura. He says, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? So is this not the prayer in the heart of the jiva when he was acting as Chitraketu, now being transferred into his life as Vritrasura? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. So what does he want to become? He wants to become a devotee. What does he want to become as a devotee? Servant. Does he want to become a servant? Servant of the servant. He doesn't even want to step, put himself forward and say, please, here I am, I want to serve you. He's saying, please, here I am, allow me to serve somebody who's serving you. I remember many, many years ago when my husband and I, we were traveling from Australia to America, and we had the good fortune to be traveling on the same flight as Srila Prabhupada, which we had arranged prior to his visit in 1976 to Melbourne. And Srila Prabhupada was a little concerned about us because we were not really fully serious at that particular moment in our spiritual practices. So he welcomed the opportunity to take some time to strengthen our Krishna consciousness. So once we were in, we were traveling, we went to Fiji and then to Los Angeles, Hawaii, then Los Angeles. So in Fiji, we had a darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was speaking to my husband, and at one point he said to my husband, what do you want to do? You're not fixed up in anything. What do you want to do? And my husband said, I want to preach. And Prabhupada looked at him. He said, you cannot preach. You are not fixed up in anything. And then my husband said, then I want to serve someone who is preaching. And Srila Prabhupada, I remember, he looked at him just for a moment because he was in the middle of a serious chastisement. So he didn't relax his gaze. But he looked at him and he just went, And with that, he took in and accepted that second statement. And later we found ourselves in a situation that was very fortunate and helpful for our spiritual advancement. And we often remembered how Prabhupada just went, He didn't smile. He was not pleased at all with us, but he acknowledged that, yes, this is the correct way to be thinking. So he is thinking like this. Now, please hear about somebody else who also was very fortunate in this way. In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, there is one person known as Devananda Pandit. You may have heard of him or you may not have heard of him. But he was a great reciter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, a very highly respected man in Navadvip. And he was a pundit and everyone liked to hear his discourses on the Bhagavatam. And in fact, one day, Srivas Pandit went to listen to him. But during the lecture, due to unforeseen circumstances, Srivas Pandit fainted. And when he fainted, the persons who were the students of Devananda Pandit became offended because he created some disturbance. And they asked him to leave. There was a mystery behind this. But anyway, Devananda Pandit at this particular point made an offense to Srivas Pandit. And then later, he found that it was difficult for him to accept Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was actually an impersonalist at heart. So his presentation of the Bhagavatam wasn't actually in a devotional mood. So when Lord Chaitanya was preaching and distributing love of God, he couldn't really fully appreciate this. So one time, Lord Chaitanya saw Devananda Pandit in the street and he spoke heavy, heavy, harsh words to him, because of his offense to Srivas Pandit and also because of his impersonal tendencies. And Devananda Pandit accepted that chastisement, but he himself could not enter into the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Yet when Lord Chaitanya came back some years later to Navadvip, Devananda Pandit came to see him and his heart was totally changed. And he bowed down to Lord Chaitanya and he wept and wept and wept and begged him for his mercy. And Lord Chaitanya gave his mercy and his instructions to Devananda Pandit. So the Chaitanya Bhagavat explains a little about him. Devananda Pandit, after Lord Chaitanya left, he met one devotee called Vrakreshwar Pandit. And Vrakreshwar was a very, very, very intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya. And he used to lead kirtan. And he could lead kirtan that went on for 1 day, 2 days, non-stop. Just think. We stop after half an hour and we take a little break, or we take an hour, we have an hour of kirtan. But he went at one time, he went for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. Continuously chanting, 72 hours. And Lord Chaitanya said of Vrakreshwar Pandit that he is like one wing. If I had another wing like him, I could fly and soar in the sky. So he loved Vrakreshwar Pandit very much. And Vrakreshwar Pandit would go into a deep state of ecstatic trance during his chanting. So Devananda Pandit, one time, he saw Vrakreshwar chanting. And Devananda Pandit began to serve Vrakreshwar with sincere devotion. When he would dance, he would walk around him with a cane to keep the crowd back, because he was so sensational, so attractive. And if Vrakreshwar fell and fainted in ecstasy, Devananda would rush forward and catch him in his arms. And he would take the dust of Vrakreshwar's lotus feet and smear it all over his body with sincere humility and devotion. And in this way, by serving Sri Vrakreshwar and seeing his elevated devotional characteristics, there developed in Devananda Pandit a strong faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is one of the mainstays of the process of making advancement. You have to find somebody more advanced than yourself, and you have to try to emulate them. You have to try to follow them, see what they're doing, try to do it yourself, try to move forward, and if possible, to serve them. And that may not always be possible, because extremely advanced devotees, very, very advanced devotees, don't even like to accept service. When I was in 2008, I was in Vrindavan, and there was one very, very, very old Vaishnava who had been in the Krishna Balaram temple since the 70s. And his name is Vibhu Chaitanya. And Vibhu Chaitanya had left his family. He was from Bangladesh, and he had come to serve Srila Prabhupada, initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and he had served in the kitchen. And he did all the offerings for the deities throughout the day. And when he was too old to do that service, I think they had to take 14 people to replace him. And he would not accept any service from anyone. If you gave him a gift, he didn't want it. If you did anything to serve him, he didn't want it. He didn't want any service at all. And I remember the then temple president, who was our Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj, who was visiting last time I was here. And he would come and he tried to arrange people to take care of him in the last stages of his life. And he would say, "Tell him, I do not want to take any service." And so Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj, he couldn't even offer him service even then, when he was practically on his deathbed. But Iendra Prabhu was able to offer the service of 7 or 8 hours of straight kirtan at the very end of his life. So this particular personality, he was so advanced, so incredibly advanced, and so humble, that it was very difficult to find anything to give him. And if we would sometimes go and visit him when we were in Vrindavan and bring him something, and we had a very affectionate relationship from so many years, and whatever we would give him, he would give someone. So we liked to give him things, so he had things to give people, because they didn't stay with him very long. He passed them on. So this is the mentality that a very advanced devotee has. And we should aspire that someday, I can't imagine how it would ever be possible for me, but someday it would be very nice to come to an insight or an understanding of what such a person is experiencing that allows them to totally disregard the taking of anything. They don't take anything because they have so much. If you fill up a cup, you can't put any more water in the cup. It will just go run down the side. So they have so much that they don't require anything. Whereas we see for ourselves, we're needing things all the time, right? We want this, we need this, we have to have one of these and so forth. So we must come to this stage where we are curious at least about what it would be like to have a very advanced state of consciousness. So then he became faithful towards Lord Chaitanya. He was undoubtedly a very pious and noble person. From his childhood he had studied the Bhagavatam. He was calm and peaceful and in control of his senses and unattached to material things. And he had so many other good qualities. But in spite of all these good qualities, he had not developed attraction to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya previously, even though he had personally met him. So here we see, he saw the Lord. He had so many good qualities, but he had not developed this faith. Nonetheless, by the grace of Vakreshwar, his perverted intelligence had become rectified. Therefore, we find in the Vedic literature that service to a pure devotee is even higher than service to the Lord himself. The Bhagavatam is stated, there may exist some doubt about obtaining perfection by serving the Lord, but there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever in achieving perfection by serving the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord. So here is a very, very important point. We have to learn to serve. So we can all say, we all have our personal associates, our guru, we have our inspirations, all of us individually, but we all have one thing very much in common, and that is that we are all under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada. We have all come in contact indirectly or directly, one way or another, with him. So his shelter is imperative, because he has no doubt, he has no fear, he has no uncertainty, he has no impurity in his service. So if we link ourselves by becoming the servant or the servant of the servant or the servant of the servant of the servant with him, then our progress is, practically speaking, is guaranteed, because he guarantees our progress. So we must learn this. Back to the prayers of Vritrasura. He also says, O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds have not yet developed their wings. You remember the baby birds? They haven't got wings, they can't fly. So they're totally dependent on the mother to feed them. If the mother goes away and doesn't come back, they will all die of starvation. So as baby birds that have not developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them. Or as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers. Or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in every respect. I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service to you. Now, what is interesting here? Yes, here he says, I also yearn to render direct service to you. Now, isn't that interesting? First, we glorify that you should serve the servant of the servant of the servant, but we also say you should also yearn to render direct service to the Lord as well. There's a little bit of a mystery here. How can I ask for this and this and this and this? But here Prabhupada says that a pure devotee, such as himself, whilst serving the servant of the servant and serving anyone, he also has this yearning. A pure devotee always yearns to associate personally with the Lord and render service unto Him. The examples given in this regard are most appropriate. A small baby bird is practically never satisfied except when the mother bird comes to feed it. A baby calf is not satisfied unless allowed to suck the milk of the mother's udder. And a chaste and a devoted wife, whose husband is away from home, is never satisfied until she has the association of her beloved husband. So we should not think that I should remain in this world serving. Something is incomplete. We have to have both. I will stay in this world as long as is necessary, and I will serve. But I want to go home. I want to go home. This is home. This is not home. This is home. This conception has to arise in our heart. This is my home up here. And I'm here traveling, as Chitraketu, it was explained to him, through very temporary phases, this body, that body, this life, that life, on and on. And when this perception arises that this is my home and this is my journey home, then our relationship with the material world alters radically. We don't think, how can I get my house? How can I get my TV set? How can I get my money? How can I get this? How can I get this? And how can I get it for my children and my grandchildren and my great-great-grandchildren and my possible great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren? We lose this perception, this particular context, and we start thinking how I can help them all and return back to Godhead. And we may be thinking to ourselves, my gosh, if I did that, well, how would I take care of everything? How would I take care of them? How would they take care of themselves if I don't instill in them this essence, you have to work hard and get everything here? And Srila Prabhupada speaks here about coming from darkness to light. He says, Krishna says, Sarvadamam Purichaja. He says, you rascal. Prabhupada used to like that word. And actually, when you understand the way we think and the way we should think, you really understand why he called us rascals. He called them rascals. He called us rascals also. Because we're so far away from our home. You rascal. You give up all these karma, yoga, jnana, siddhi. You kick it all out. Mam ekam sharanam vraja. This is the instruction. Only unto me, and then you will be satisfied. Then the kami will say, oh, because he has got the idea that without working, I'm just like these fools and rascals, Prabhupada says, talking about the people in the street that he is staying in at the temple. They are surprised. They are thinking, how do these people, they do not work, but how are they so happy? They cannot imagine that without working hard, one can eat and one can sleep. But when they see that our devotees, they do not work, they are nobody's servant, they say, how is it possible? They cannot think. They cannot think. And Prabhupada says, but it is possible. Therefore, when Krishna says, Mam ekam sharanam vraja, the kamis and the jnanis, they are thinking, but how will I live? If I simply become a devotee of Krishna, how shall I live? And therefore, Krishna says, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. I will give you protection. This is Krishna consciousness. I will give you protection. You first of all surrender unto me. First of all, surrender unto me. And then, second, whatever you want, there will be supply. First of all, surrender unto me. Then there will be supply. Chitraketu was so eager to get his desires met. He surrendered. Then he attained a position far beyond the position that he had before. But he did that. He acted in that position dutifully. He didn't act for his own pleasure anymore. And the Lord then thought, let me get him here to me quickly. So Prabhupada also, he says, our business should be that we may not be uncomfortably living. We don't have to be uncomfortable, which may disturb our progress in Krishna consciousness. We should not be uncomfortable. That much, Prabhupada says. He is not saying you should not be uncomfortable, so you need a Rolls Royce and you have to have a house with so many floors and stories and beautiful furniture. He's saying you should not be uncomfortable. Other things, he says, depend on Krishna. If he wants to make you Indra, you will become Indra. There is no happiness in becoming Indra. But if he wants you to become Indra, you will become. We read from books how Indra is so much disturbed, always fighting. Devasura, he has to fight. The same thing as here. Only difference is the standard of living in heaven and the duration of life is greater. But if you have to struggle for existence, then what is the use of this duration of life becoming greater? A greater struggle. If you have to struggle, what's the use of a long life of struggle? See, we have to learn to turn our intelligence into an intelligent intelligence, not just a knowledge acquiring faculty that just finds out things and we know things and we have like a library in our brain. We have to learn to use that information properly by becoming actually intelligent as a devotee. And this requires some subtle intelligence to come alive in us. But everyone is capable. And this is what the process is trying to do. And our difficulty from the first one of us, from the Indra Gopa, right up to King Indra himself, is that we have attachments here. We have attachments here. And because we have those attachments, we don't become intelligent. We'll hear more about that in a few moments. So Prabhupada says, but if you have to struggle for existence, then what is the use of this duration of life being greater? Simply struggling. Where is the happiness? I see at night these small bugs. They have got the same happiness. The husband, the wife, or the male, the female, they are together, jumping, having sex, and everything in a different body. Same thing is going on in the higher planetary system. There is no other business. Regardless of where, what body you have, there is nothing else going on. Only the same material activities. Does anyone have any thoughts or questions about this point? Everybody looks very thoughtful, which is wonderful. We should think about these things that we hear. You see, the reason that I became a little annoyed when everybody went out to have tea is that you're chanting Guru Puja and everyone is jumping up and down and dancing very nicely. So I walk in, I think, oh, these devotees are so serious. Look at them. They're all dancing and jumping. They must all be thinking Krishna, 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 and trying to serve Krishna. And then an announcement is made for tea and boop, everyone's gone. And I'm like, what's going on? All of a sudden, the tea, you write tea and everybody disappears quickly. So that means that the tea is more attractive to them and that at that particular moment than their Krishna consciousness. You should see this. It happens to us all the time. I'm certainly not a person who can make a chastisement to you that is not also suitable for myself. But for that reason, I say I should look at it, you also should look at it. And you should see that I'm not going to become Krishna conscious if I don't understand the difference between material and Krishna conscious service. Otherwise the jumping up and down becomes exercise. And it's good. You get very strong from jumping up and down. But your bhakti may not develop. So please take this to heart because it's a very important point. Your kirtan, you can have kirtan and you can just play music. You can just enjoy singing. In fact, that's very fortunate because I remember for myself when I first came, I got a card on the street and I took it home. I didn't know anything and I thought, oh, this is good. I can practice my singing lessons. So I sang Hare Krishna up and down the scales, singing, just to practice singing. And because the mantra is so powerful, it still had an effect gradually. But if after 20 years, 30 years, you're still doing the same thing, well, next birth you're definitely going to become a good singer. But what is your bhakti? So it's Srila Prabhupada's mercy that he allowed this to take place, as I'm pointing it out, so you can see this. We can see this for ourselves. Yeah, actually, this makes sense. Where is my bhakti? I have to develop that. Now, let me share with you a little bit about King Indra, because yesterday I was given some questions. And the questions pertained to this last part of this Leela where Indra received his reactions for his sinful activities. And the questions that came to my mind when I read this verse, as I told you the other class, was I thought to myself, hang on a minute. The sages asked Indra to do this. They asked him to kill Vritrasura. And then they said to him also, we'll take care of you if you do it. We have arrangement. If you do this, we'll take care of everything. And still King Indra had to suffer sinful reactions. For actually up to 1,000 years, he had to suffer. So my thought when I read that was, does that mean that the advice of sages, you had to be very careful not to trust sages because they may fool you or cheat you? And another question was raised, why would a sage ask somebody to kill a brahmana? And another question that was raised was, why would a sage make some kind of atonement, saying, don't worry if you do this thing. I will just take care of it. I'll do some asava made a sacrifice and I'll balance everything out, so don't worry about doing this sinful act. Why would a sage also do that? So let us look very quickly at the end of this pastime, which we didn't read previously. After King Indra killed Vritrasura, he had been asked to kill him by the sages and the demigods because he was so fierce and so terrifying and he was angry at Indra. And he had already trampled over the demigods and the armies of the demigods in his endeavor to kill Indra. He was interested in Indra. So the sages and saintly persons asked him to kill him and Indra said, no, I won't do it. Because I already went through this once before. I killed a brahmana and I got a reaction. Somehow I managed to balance that all out. And now here I am. I don't want to do this. I can't kill him. And then the sages told him, no, you kill him and we will take care of everything. We will perform a horse yajna, which is such a powerful yajna. It has so many pious aspects to it that even if you were to destroy your guru, even if you were to do any abominable thing, it will all be nullified and balanced and Lord Narayan will be pleased with you after you perform this yajna. So here we can see perhaps that the sages were of the Karmakandya kind because after all this is in the heavenly planets, so they're all trying to work out how to get the karma, reduce the karma and increase the enjoyment. So perhaps it does not mention which sages were busy in this way, but the sages suggested to him nonetheless to perform this action. And when he had finally killed Vritrasura, all the demigods and all the sages were very happy, and they all left that place and returned to their homes and not one of them spoke a word to Indra. They left very quietly. And Indra was so morose, he could not find any peace of mind. And so the question may be asked, why was Indra himself so unhappy if he was following the advice of the sages? So Prabhupada says, this of course is a very intelligent question. When a demon is killed, all the demigods are happy. But in this case, when all the demigods were happy because Vritrasura had been killed, Indra was unhappy because he knew that he had killed a great Vaishnava. He knew who Vritrasura was. Vritrasura outwardly appeared to be a demon, and the instruction was given to kill him. He's a demon. But inwardly, he was a great devotee and therefore a great Brahmana. Herein it is clearly indicated that a person who is not at all demonic, such as Prahlad Maharaj or Bali Maharaj, may outwardly be a demon or born in the family of demons. Therefore, in terms of real culture, one should not be considered a demigod or a demon simply according to birth. So here, Indra was not happy because he understood the qualification of Vritrasura, that even though he had come in this way to try and kill him, he understood that Vritrasura was a perfect Vaishnava, and therefore, of course, he was also a Brahmana. So then, all the other sages went home, but Indra, he didn't go home. He remained there for some time. He had heard, of course, that he would be performing this Asavamedha sacrifice. And he remained where he was for some time. And then, because of the way he was feeling towards what he had done, he decided that he would leave that place and he would go to a place called Manasi Ganga, Manasarovara. And there at Manasarovara, actually, first of all, before he went there, he remained in that place where the battle had taken place. But all of a sudden, he saw this, like a chandala woman, a woman like you could see an apparition, like a ghost or something. He could see the personification of the reaction of his sins chasing him, like a very ugly lady with kind of tuberculosis, it's described, and sort of coughing blood and kind of smelling very horrible, and kind of somebody you'd see on the street in India, and you'd make a quick detour down another street so you wouldn't bump into them. And this person was chasing him. In the air they were chasing him. He could see this. And wherever he went, he could see this personality chasing him, the personification of what he had. Agni was offering him some food, but practically speaking, he was starving while he remained there, and he was protected. So even though he was suffering, his sins were diminished by the result of Rudra. Lord Shiva was merciful to him and reduced the effects of the reaction of his sins. And Lakshmi also protected him because he was hiding in the filament of these lotuses where Lakshmi resided. And so he stayed there, but his sinful reaction did not actually affect him. Which means that he saw it. He saw the sinful reaction. He had to suffer something, but it didn't overpower him and kill him, as it would with somebody who was very, very sinful and didn't carry the same piety as King Indra did, the same power as King Indra did. And as soon as King Indra had lived out the amount of time required to atone, you could say, a natural atonement for what he had done, then he found himself able to return to the heavenly planets. And when he returned to the heavenly planets, then the sages performed the Asvamedha Yajna. So the understanding was that even though he was following the instructions of the sages, and they could nullify any permanent reaction for what he had done, he still had to suffer something. And he understood why. And if we think about the pastime, we can see that where did it originate? Way, way, way back in the beginning. Offense to Brihaspati. His offenses towards Brihaspati. So he was carrying that through so many different situations. And finally, at this particular point, everything, you could say, the positives and the negatives were nullified, and now he was actually free from that. So this is a very subtle process, and anyone would like to ask me questions, I can try to answer them to the best of my ability. But my understanding when I read this many, many years ago was that if I'm acting as a devotee on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, but if I perform my activities improperly, I do something that's not correct, I should expect some reaction for that. But I should not expect that I will be destroyed by it, because Srila Prabhupada's protection is there. But if I think that I'm immune to reactions, I can do whatever I want because I'm a devotee. I'm a devotee, so I offended somebody, but it's all right because I'm a devotee. I did something in those early days in the 70s and the 80s, we used to go out on the street and we used to consider all other living beings as karmis. And karmis were like practically untouchable. All you could do was sell them a book and if possible, just get their money. And that would benefit them so that perhaps sometime in the future they would become devotees. And if they didn't become devotees, then they were really of another species almost. So when we go out and we do service with a mood that's not actually that of a pure devotee, there'll be something for us to learn from it. There has to be. But because we're serving Srila Prabhupada simultaneously, because we're serving, we are protected. But both of those things will be there. If we think that one or the other is there, we're mistaken. Both of them are there. And this is a very difficult thing sometimes for people to accept. Will I get a reaction for doing something? Yes, you may. But also you will receive Krishna's protection because you're his devotee. And he's attached to his devotees. And when he gives a reaction for something a devotee does, he does it in the way that a loving father will give something to chastise the children so they grow up quickly and they grow up nicely. And if there's no chastisement, how will that child learn? So here Indra is given the opportunity to learn something. Do we have any questions about that? Question at the back, yes. 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 No. Because he didn't, for him, because of his stature as a devotee, it didn't mean anything to him being cursed, if you understand what I mean. That didn't disturb him. He was totally neutral to that. If you want to do this, he offered all respects to Parvati. But Parvati herself understood from it what an exalted devotee he was. But there was no offense made by Parvati, and there was no offense made by this exalted devotee. It was a lesson for us in that situation. And there was an opportunity that Krishna took this opportunity to quickly, He was going to be flying around like that for millions and millions of lives. You see, we have our service here in this world, even our devotional service. But this isn't our home. We must understand this. This isn't our home. This place, as Prabhupada says, is fearful. Now, there's a good word. No one has heard that word before. Prabhupada says it is fearful. It's a dangerous place. And we see this. We read about it. We hear it on the news. But we don't understand it. It doesn't penetrate into our brain. This is not our home. This is our home. So he's flying around, performing his devotional activity here. And Krishna is thinking how to get him out of here, up there. And he was ready. And so therefore he's saying, I'm always yearning for devotional, direct service to you. First he's saying, I want my service to serve the devotees. But he's also saying, and I want to go home. So there was nothing there that was faulty. Yes. Well, you could say they took a step backwards, or you could say that they had to experience the consequences of their material desires, if you understand what I mean. Well, in the case of Vitrasura, Chitraketu Vitrasura, he didn't take a step backwards because his consciousness remained the same. Even though he was transferred into another, a fearsome body, his consciousness was exactly the same. He didn't. A step backwards means when I forget. And practically speaking, Bharat Maharaj also didn't forget. But he had some lingering kind of contamination, you could say. He had explained, the Acharyas explained with Bharat Maharaj that he identified as a king because he had served as a king. He was a king. He was a Kshatriya. So when he saw the deer, he became excessively attached to the deer, not a little bit attached to the deer, excessively attached to the deer, in the ego that I am the king, I must give protection. So he had something still in his mind to do with a bodily identification. And so he went through a process which took him to the stage where he no longer had that. But he had it, if you understand what I mean. He wasn't walking along and oops, he took a step backwards. He had this, and it had to be removed before he could go forwards. There was one more question. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Yes. Well, they didn't interfere. What they did was they supported him. Indra's sins were diminished by the influence of Rudra, the demigod of all directions. Because Indra was protected by the goddess of fortune, Lord Vishnu's wife, who resides in the lotus clusters at Manasarovara, Indra's sins could not affect him. Indra was ultimately relieved of all the reactions of his sinful deeds by strictly worshipping Lord Vishnu. That's how he received his result, his freedom, by strictly worshipping Lord Vishnu, not by the Asavamedha. Then he was called back to the heavenly planets by the Brahmanas and reinstated in his position. When Indra reached the heavenly planets, the saintly Brahmanas approached him and properly initiated him into a horse sacrifice meant to please the Supreme Lord. So now he could do the horse sacrifice, because he had lived out the reaction to what he did. He was morose, right? He was remorseful. Devasamuni, if we use that example to compare with ourselves, Devasamuni shows the example that he was angry and then he was running away from the reaction for his anger. And when he was remorseful enough, he went back and apologized. and then he was nullified then by the mercy of Ambarish Maharaj. Indra was already morose. He understood even when he was fighting, Vritrasura revealed to him who he was and said to him, please release your thunderbolt. I'm ready. I want to go there. Please do it. And Indra was then very reluctant because he understood, my goodness, I'm going to kill him. And he's a great Vaishnava. I'm going to kill him. And Vritrasura said, well, if you don't kill me, I'm going to kill you. Because it's a fight. So then Indra had to fight for his life. But his fighting wasn't done out of anger now. His fight became as a matter of duty. But because in the beginning, why did Vritrasura appear? Even though there are so many elements to the pastime, because Indra, way back before, he was so proud, he didn't offer proper respect to Brihaspati. Brihaspati disappeared. He needed a priest. Vishwarup was recommended, given a warning to him, be careful because you have to be tolerant of the fact that he's partial to both sides. And Indra accepted him for his well-being, for Indra's well-being. And then when he showed his partiality to the other side, Indra killed him. So there's a consequence going on. And what I find interesting about this is that when we find ourselves in a difficult position in life, as we do sometimes, some suffering comes, or we see somebody else's difficulties, and we feel, why is that happening to such a person? Then we should understand there must be a consequence, there's a sequence going on, and this is part of that. And the only way that you can tolerate the difficult situation is if you can go above it and actually see it like that. That I'm eternal, I'm a soul, I must have done something, and now this is coming, and I have to make my way through it. It's for some reason this is happening now. I have to make my way through it, and somehow or other depend on Krishna whilst I'm doing that. Instead of, which is the normal way, why me? And why this? And I have to change this. And I've got to get rid of this. And this shouldn't be like this. It should be like that. And on and on and on and on. Without that dependence on Krishna. And therefore there's no surrender. And without the surrender, the help doesn't appear to be help. Even though we get so much help, we can't assimilate it because there's no surrender. So this is our practice. We surrender. And then Krishna will give us all inspiration and guidance how to deal with difficulty. This is what we're trying to learn. Yes. Yes. What a wonderful question. This is a very important question. We said in the previous class that you have to emulate an advanced devotee. But we're also told that we shouldn't imitate an advanced devotee. So how do we know how to emulate somebody and not imitate them? And one thing that comes into my mind is that we have to stay in touch with our disqualifications. We have to remember. Srila Prabhupada would said one time, you should never forget where you came from. This is very important. So if I'm going to emulate somebody, I have to understand that I don't have that quality, but I'd like to have that quality. How do they act? Okay, they don't get angry. I get angry. Okay, I have to try not to get angry. But I can't imitate them, because if I imitate them, I still won't be able to do it. I'll still get angry. So that you can't actually imitate very well for very long. And if you try to imitate with a desire to emulate, that's okay. Krishna will help you. If you say, oh, he's like that, I'll try and be like that, that's okay. But if you think, he's like that and I'm like that, I can do what he can do, so I'm as advanced than him, then what will happen next? What do you think will happen? Yeah, you'll fall because you won't be able to keep up with his strides. He'll do something that you can't keep up with. And then you'll become frustrated. Oh, this is too hard. I can't do this anymore, and we'll become discouraged. And then we have to be again encouraged. No, 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 try, keep trying. But in our endeavor to do like him, if we're doing it by emulating, we will feel all the time that I'm not so good at this, but it's good for me. Whereas if we're imitating, we'll be thinking, I'm so advanced. I'm so advanced than all the people in the room here. I hardly even need to go to class anymore because I've got everything in place. I don't need anything. I'm just amazing. I'm an amazing gift to the world. Right? We'll think, I'm the best musician in the world. And then Krishna will say, listen to this person's music, and you'll try to play it, and you won't be able to play it. And then you realize, I've got a long way to go. Any other points? Yes. Yes. I looked him up. I couldn't find any particular references. On the Google, you can find a Puranic encyclopedia, and it's also on the another website. You can find it, and you can find out a little tiny bit about each one of these personalities. But I didn't find out very much about him. He has other names, and there's something said about him, but it wasn't very thorough. But Srila Prabhupada doesn't tell us about him and who he is, but he uses his example because he says, Dadichi says, well, I mean, my bones are just going to be sort of buried, so I might as well use them for the good of others. So Prabhupada uses this in terms of preaching, that we, in our life, we should think of the welfare of others. And I have seen some people use this as an argument for organ donating and things like that. But I don't know anything about these subjects, so I can't speak about it any further. Anything else? Yes.
Like in our journey in Krishna consciousness, we learned that, going to Goloka Vrindavan under Sri Chaitanya, it's the highest form. And for some reason, we don't perfect.
Mm.
I mean, do we continue our journey in that direction?
This is a very important question. Here is the question. If we are following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we've heard here about Chitraketu. In his next life, he became a Vidyadhara. He went to the heavenly planets. He was enjoying in a heavenly way. But we're following in the mood and mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do we have to go to the heavenly planets and follow in the same way? Is that what you want to know? Do we follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footsteps as we continue on in our process of purification? And the answer is definitely yes, because Kali Yuga is such that it's a dismal age for spiritual advancement. It's so difficult, and only by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can we really make advancement. Just all of us are sitting here peacefully at New Nandagram, but all of us will get in our cars and we'll drive back to the city of Melbourne or to some equivalent place. And when we get there, you go, you can feel it, all the ugra coming back on your shoulders. You look at the skyscraper buildings and everything else, and you look at the advertisements and you go, oh my gosh, here I am again, back into the realm of Maya. So Kali Yuga becomes more and more like that, more and more and more. Even now in Vrindavan, it's like that, in Sri Vrindavan Dham. They're modernizing, and now you can buy your apartment in 20-story buildings they're building, all over the dust of Vrindavan. So gradually, the dust of Vrindavan, you can only have a little plot in your backyard if you're fortunate. So this is Kali, covering up all the sacred places, But there's one place that cannot be covered, and that is Sri Mayapur Dham, where the holy name is resounding and pulsating more and more throughout the whole world. So we have come in touch with this Sampradaya through Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And we should understand that if we follow, if we seriously try to do the best we can in this life, despite all our material desires, despite all the obstacles, despite everything else, then Srila Prabhupada assures us that Lord Chaitanya will allow us to continue in this line, and it should not take a very long time. It should not take a very long time. It should take at most a handful of births if you take up this process seriously. If you don't, if you try to go in your own way, and you don't take note of the, it's like if you're going downstairs and there's a handrail. If you hold onto the handrail, there's very little chance of slipping. But if you run down the stairs or run up the stairs a little carelessly, you may slip. You may tumble for some time. But if you take a hold of the handrail of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya's mercy, we should expect to make a lot of progress quite quickly. So this is the promise, and we have to put it to the test in our own lives. And expect to suffer. Don't be so unhappy about suffering. Learn to live with suffering. Say, okay, a little suffering never hurt anybody. Where are my beads? Get on with your chanting. Get on with the process as best you can. As soon as you can, as soon as you've got over whatever it is that's bothering you, keep going, because this process is very, very, very powerful. This is very important to understand. Yes. They would disappear? Yes. Yes, but it's quite a large amount of time. You see, so what you have to do, I always think of this, you know, if you want to break a piece of wire, you have a piece of wire, you want to break it, it's not so easy, you can't just go crunch, because it's wire, it's metal. So what do? You bend it down, you bend it up, you bend it down, you bend it up, you bend it down and up and down and up enough times, and all of a sudden it will snap, and it's broken. This is a process. So the same way with us, we need on one hand encouragement, and then we need chastisement. And then we need encouragement, and we need chastisement. We need to go backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards to make the balance work. So sometimes devotees think that, oh, I've heard that actually for 10,000 years, approximately, Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada's mercy will be there, so I don't need to make any kind of a rush. I've also heard that maybe it won't take me too long to get back to Godhead, so let me go to the movies instead. So then you need a chastisement, and then you need encouragement. And we should learn how to administer these to ourselves in our own sadhana bhakti, as well as accepting them from others. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? And then when we're feeling very, very hopeless and sad, no, 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 you're doing very nicely. Keep going. And any mother knows that this is what you have to do with your children. So this is what we have to do with the mind. Chastise and encourage at the same time, or at the particularly appropriate time for each one. In that handful of births, is the 10,000 years sufficient? Well, the answer there is, it depends what in your heart of heart of hearts you want. If deep within your heart, the thing you really want most is to go to the heavenly planets, then it's not sufficient. Then you'll come back and it may be over. The show's over. Yes. So therefore, if we have that in our heart, we should feel concerned about that. If we see that, yes, I actually do feel like that would be nice, let me tell you about it so you can develop an attachment for it. Listen to this. This is what it's like there. Now, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni is looking for the devotee who has the most mercy of the Lord. And he hears about a king in South India who's so pious, and all of his citizens are all, they're peaceful, happy, they're religious, everything is so nice. He goes and glorifies this king when he meets him and says, I've heard about you, and I think you're the greatest devotee. And the king is very, very, very embarrassed. And he says, how can I consider myself a great devotee when the demigods are there? So listen to the demigod's life. To demonstrate this, he contrasts the demigods with ordinary human beings. Humans like himself acknowledge the superiority of the demigods and worship them in Vedic sacrifices. Why? Because the demigods are less encumbered than human beings by physical restraints. That means that they are free to travel as they like. They can even fly in the sky without a vehicle. Some rich and powerful human beings may be famous for giving charity, but the demigods have universal powers by which they can fulfill all of their worshippers' desires. How attractive is that? So we have to learn, we have to test ourselves. Just like when you put before the baby, you put the Bhagavatam and the rice and the other articles to see what the baby will choose, what is its tendency. So we sometimes have to hear this. So we think, if we think, oh, that's very nice, we can go, oh, Krishna, Krishna, please help me. I might not be here for the next 10,000 years. The soma nectar of the demigods that they drink frees them from death, disease, and old age. Now, it doesn't actually totally free them from death, but it frees them from disease and old age. And as implied by the word adi, also it protects them from, relieves them from fatigue. You can have no more fatigue. Perspiration, bodily odors, they have none of these. They from miles away, they smell fragrant. And other such embarrassments. So if you want to be beautiful, more beautiful and more beautiful, you want to be charming and more charming, then you should listen to this. Since the demigods are never hungry and they are never thirsty, one might question what benefit they derive from drinking their somaras. The king answers that they enjoy somaras very much, and their pleasure is much more subtle than the anamaya gratification of ordinary eating and drinking. So our eating and drinking is so gross. We stick things in our mouth, we chew them, and saliva comes, and it goes to our stomach, and then it gets rejected out of the other end of the body. It's so gross. But the demigods aren't like that. They have no hunger, no thirst, no needs of any kind. Their enjoyment is so refined and sattvic and subtle. So it's so attractive. So, compared with the mortals of earth, the inhabitants of heaven seem to be immortal and independent. Therefore, this particular king has decided that they must be the most dear to Lord Krishna. So we're hearing here of the glories of Lord Indra, and we're also hearing that although we respect him, we respect all of the demigods, we're hearing that the glories of Lord Indra aren't sufficient for a Vaishnava to become distracted. But we should know how exquisite they are. Otherwise, we'll be kind of like childish, you know. Oh, I don't want, oh, blah, 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 blah. But if we were offered, if just one offering was made, this is what you can have, it might spin our head around and we might choose that instead because it's very attractive. So when we hear about it, if we're attracted to it, there's no problem there. Because then we can understand that we have a lot more work to do on our Krishna consciousness. Two more questions. Yes. 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 He was interfering with the secondary characteristics of his life. He wasn't interfering with his desire. His desire was always the same. It's like if you work for a company and you're a carpenter, they may say to you, now we want you to live in Perth. And they may say, now I want you to live in Melbourne. They may alter the secondary characteristics of your work, where you live, but you'll continue as a carpenter. So he was already yearning to return home, and so by the Lord's arrangement, he sped it up. So he didn't act contrarily to Chitraketu's own inner wish, but he made an arrangement to accelerate his progress. We should also hope for that. We don't want to be cursed, of course, but we should hope that somehow or other Krishna will make an arrangement to accelerate our progress. We should have that desire, and then he can do it. Yes. Yes. He remembered what Indra did to Vishwarup, who was his brother, who was a pure and sinless Brahmana. And he became overcome with emotion and anger on behalf of his father and his brother. So just like you may become angry at somebody who offends a Vaishnava, so that's different than just being an angry person. So it describes at the beginning of the fight, he was very emotional when he was saying to Indra, you killed my brother, he was sinless, he was your guru. How could you have done that? You're such a despicable person. So this was what motivated him. Yes. 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 But internally what happened, Indra didn't know. Indra didn't know that he went into a yogic trance and left. Indra's understanding was that he killed him. So, well, he killed him, if you know what I mean. Like, he killed him. But he didn't kill him. He was too powerful, so he disappeared before he could kill him. But he killed his body. But he couldn't kill him because he was protected. So Indra didn't know that. So Indra had to take the reaction for the activity that he had performed, even though the Lord had protected Vritrasura and taken him away. He had disappeared. He had left the body before Indra did that. Indra didn't know that. The demigods didn't know that. The reaction that Indra was receiving now was particularly in relationship to Vritrasura, killing Vritrasura. He had already suffered the reaction for the first mistake that he made. And now he had made a second mistake, and now he was undergoing the reaction for the second thing that he had done. Is that clear? Yeah. All right. I want to read you something just before we finish that I thought was quite sweet that I found when I was researching for this class. It's a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and some devotees in Japan. So it begins with a Japanese man, and he puts his hand up and he asks Prabhupada, I always want to ask whether if you met demigods, or Indra, or Brahma, and Prabhupada is obviously not understanding the question. So Paramahansa, his Prabhupada's servant traveling with him, he says, he wants to know if you met any of the demigods, Brahma, Indra, and Prabhupada. looks at the man and says, then what benefit will be for you? Suppose if I met, now what benefit you will derive out of it? And if I say, yes, I have met, then what benefit will you get? Why are you asking this question? That you do not know. This is Srila Prabhupada. Why are you asking? And Srila Prabhupada, when he would speak like that, you would feel like a worm. I wish I hadn't asked that question. But the Japanese man, he says, maybe sense gratification? And everyone laughed. And then Srila Prabhupada said, what is that, maybe? And Trivikram Maharaj says, he said, maybe sense gratification? And Prabhupada says, yes, it is sense gratification. The Japanese man persisted and said, but actually, other devotees, they sometimes tell me that you met Indra, or, and he's trying again, and Prabhupada says, yes, I have met Indra, or I have not met Indra. So if I meet Indra, what benefit do you get? And if I did not meet Indra, what is your loss? This is my question. Why do you ask this question? You have no profit, no loss. Any other question? Put some intelligent questions. Then we can understand that you are studying really. Then there's a little break. Then Trivikram Maharaj says to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, if Indra met you, then there would be some benefit for him. Prabhupada says, our proposition is that suppose you know the president of Japan. Who is the president? A king or president here? And the Japanese man says, king, emperor. So Prabhupada says, so if you know the emperor, you can, then what is the use of knowing the constable? Trivikram says to the Japanese man, you understand? If you know the prime minister or the head man, then the less important man is not necessary to know. So because Srila Prabhupada knows Krishna, it is not important. And Prabhupada stops him. And he says, we do not disrespect anyone in the government service. So this point struck me. We should not disrespect King Indra. He is in the government service. Even if he appears to do what we do and get into trouble for, we should not disrespect him or think he is like us. Or not, neither should we think, oh, we should do what Indra does, because then we will get into trouble. So we should understand properly. Prabhupada continues, we do not disrespect anyone in the government service. But if I know the supreme person in the government, why shall I go and beg from the lower grade officer? If I want something, I can ask the supreme, is it all right or not? What is the use? Oh, he is known to the emperor. They may come to see me, but I cannot go and see them. And we have no want. So what he's saying here is, I know the highest person, so I have no need to go and see them. They can come and see me if they want, but he's saying, I have nothing to want. I don't want anything. It's because I don't want anything. Why should I go and see the demigods? We have no want. Krishna knows. What is our business? Krishna knows. And what is our business? He says, our business is to spread the glories of Krishna. We are directly in the service of Krishna. So whatever is wanted, he will supply. Why should I go to somebody? It is his business, Krishna's business. So for a devotee, there is no need of meeting. We have all respect for them, but there is no need of meeting any demigod. We are all servants of Krishna. He is the supreme controller. So why should we go to the subordinate controller? Is there any necessity? And then he says, you do not follow me, what I say. So the man must have been struggling with Krishna's and Prabhupada's answer. So then Trivikram says, is there any necessity to go? He says to the Japanese man, do we need to go to Indra? And the Japanese man says, oh, no, no. And then Prabhupada says, then there is no need. Why should I bother my head for meeting the demigods? We have no business. We know the Supreme, and the Supreme knows what I want. So I haven't got to ask even the Supreme that I want this thing. I want this thing. No, there is no need. He already knows. And he will supply. Why? Because I am engaged in his business. This is how we have to feel. I'm engaged in his business. If we don't feel like that, we should become engaged in his business. And we will feel like that. Just like we feel that identification with family or in married life. I'm engaged in doing this, so my husband will take care of this. It's logical. We have to develop that same sense of relationship with Krishna. And then Krishna will take care of everything that we need. Secondarily and primarily, he will help us to learn to love him. And then Prabhupada says, and what is our business? He's talking of himself here. He says, why are we bothering so much in this old age? Our only business is that people may know Krishna, the supreme controller. That is our business. We have no other business. We don't want anything either from Krishna or from demigods or anyone. We are carrying this Bhagavad Gita as it is, and we are trying to educate people that here is real knowledge. Take it. That is our business. That is our only business. That people may know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. That's all. We have no other business. So this is to get us, these quotes help us to get back on track after we've heard how wonderful the heavenly planets are. So we can bend the wire backwards and forwards until it snaps and our attachment to this world is broken. And then Krishna can make a rapid arrangement for accelerated advancement back to his eternal abode. So as every other morning that we have been here, Keshava has appeared, and so we understand that it is time to end our class here. So thank you very much for being wonderful listeners, and thank you for your intelligent questions, and thank you for the opportunity to spend some time with the Bhagavatam in depth and try to find out some of the answers to my own doubts and inquiries and thereby share them with you. Thank you. Hare Krishna.